Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Carice. Today is January 15th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. Hope you're all doing well today. The title of today's podcast is All the President's Men. We're going to talk about market performance. We're going to talk about the signing ceremony of Phase 1 between the U.S. and China. Articles of impeachment have been sent from the House of Representatives to the United States Senate, where a trial is scheduled to commence next week. There was also an exclusive interview this evening on MSNBC on Rachel Maddow's show, where she interviewed Lev Parnas, one of the individuals who has been arrested by the FBI, who was an associate of Rudy Giuliani's in this whole Ukrainian impeachment saga. So there's a lot to talk about. And once again, we are very timely here at the Capital News and how we titled our podcast for yesterday, because that was a wild week in Washington. I mean, we're just getting started here. It's Wednesday. We got a couple more days to go, and it is going to be wild, wild weeks, plural, in Washington, D.C. for the foreseeable future. First, to some market performance. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 88 points today, up 0.3%. The S&P 500 gained 6, up 0.2%. The NASDAQ relatively flat for the day. Why is it relatively flat for the day? Wasn't there a signing ceremony? Isn't everything supposed to be fantastic? Remarkable? The best deal ever? Well, why are markets relatively flat? But we do have the Dow Jones closing above 29,000. What about on the commodity front? If we have this great deal between the two largest economies in the world, wouldn't that be boosting commodities? Shouldn't oil and gas be going through the roof? Well, we have crude oil at $58 a barrel. That's WTI. We have Brent, the international metric, at $64.50 per barrel. This is well below where we were only a couple weeks ago, when it came to the Iranian-U.S. tensions. Natural gas just hit a five-month low as well. Well, wait a minute. We got all of this great stuff taking place. Isn't there supposed to be a whole bunch of demand for all of these commodities? For oil and natural gas? What's going on here? Why the pullback? Well, of course, it is a function of supply and demand. And this is something that has me somewhat concerned when it comes to a lot of the debt that exists out there in the marketplace, especially within the energy sector. A lot of that is classified as junk, by the way. A lot of junk bonds are in the energy sector, not exclusively by any stretch of the imagination, but a significant portion, of the junk bond market and the leveraged loan market is comprised of energy companies. Well, if you have low prices and you have a whole bunch of debt that you have to pay back, what are you going to have to continue doing? You have to continue to produce because those debt payments don't stop. Those payments to the bank, those payments to your creditors, to the people who lent you money, you have to pay them back. So there is such a huge amount of oil and gas in the marketplace. That's why, despite all the tensions that we've seen in the Middle East, the Iranian attacks on the Saudi oil fields, on the escalation between the United States and Iran, despite those spikes in oil prices, not in natural gas, but in oil, they've then retreated. And that's because of the supply-demand functions. There is so much supply in the marketplace. This is a direct result of cheap money. Period. End of story. This is the malinvestment. Prices send signals. Cheap money sends a bad signal to continue to produce. I mean, we are going to end up with a Federal Reserve and other central banks that have created, now they're trying to, obviously they say, they're trying to create inflation. But what they're doing by propping up a whole bunch of zombie corporations is they are overproducing. There's overcapacity. There's overproduction. There's too much stuff and not enough people to buy it. This is pulling future demand forward to today, something we have been talking about for almost a year since this podcast has been online, with no end in sight, none whatsoever. So that's going to cause prices to come down because there's overproduction. These zombie companies, while they're zombie companies, they are still producers. They are on the producer side of the ledger, so they're going to continue to produce because they have more and more debt to pay. And now I read an article earlier this afternoon about 40%, not 40% of all listed companies are not profitable. 40%. Does that sound like the greatest economy ever in the history of the United States of America? 40% of listed companies are not making money. Well, how can that be? Another interesting statistic for you guys. Since Donald Trump has been president, GDP has increased by $2.6 trillion. Seems pretty good. Well, then you have to ask, well, how much debt has been accumulated over the same period? Oh, $2.9 trillion. And for those of you who may not be aware, $2.9 trillion is greater than 2.6. So 2.6 trillion of GDP growth, 2.9 trillion in debt growth since Donald Trump has become president of the United States. So forget diminishing marginal returns. It's completely negative now. We are not getting any bang for the buck. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. It takes that much more debt to create, quote unquote, create that level of growth. And is it worth it? No. I'll give you that answer right now. It is not worth it. Because we got to pay it back, principal plus interest. Does that sound like a good recipe to you? Does that sound like a booming economy to you? It shouldn't. And you don't need to be an economist. You just need to have common sense, and you need to take the blinders off. You need to take the headphones off, and you need to get out of your silo. If you're following Donald Trump to the edges of the earth, no matter what, you got to wake up. You got to wake up. So that's the commodity space. What about precious metals? I mean, if there was such a great deal, shouldn't all of the animal spirits be out? Anything that would be construed as a safe haven, shouldn't that just be gone to the wayside? Nobody should want gold, silver, bonds, anything. Right? It should be risk on. Well, what's going on with gold and silver? No major sell-offs here. We have gold trading at $1,556 an ounce. Silver is at $17.98 an ounce, hovering where it's been for the past few days. What about Uncle Sam's 10-year notes? Yielding 1.79%. So there continues to be a divergence, once again, between how the stock market is performing and how the bond market is performing. We're going to have to wait and see who's right. And most of the time, if you're going to allow history to be a guide, and I always say that history is a great guide, that the bond market will prove correct. And that means there is going to have to be quite a correction in the stock market. But for the time being, so far, so long as the Federal Reserve continues to prime the pump, keep those presses going 24/7, well, then they can delay it. They've been doing it since September. And we have every belief that they will continue to do so well through the first quarter of 2020, if not beyond. Okay? So this is not a free market economy. This is bought and paid for. And I hope you understand how detrimental this is to the entire economy and especially to younger generations. I mean, they have no say in this. They did not vote for any of this, but they got to pay the price for all of it. It's a moral and ethical crime, and it should be an actual crime as far as I'm concerned, but it won't be because the powers that be, this is what they're gunning for. This is what they want. This is the system that they have employed. This is the system that they want to just keep in perpetuity. There's no end in sight. There's nobody calling for the abolishment of the Federal Reserve. There's nobody calling for the abolishment of the federal income tax. I am. I hope you are too. I hope you're starting to understand all of this and how it's all interconnected. So that's some of the market performance. We also have some news out of Germany. German 2019 GDP growth slows to a six-year low. A six-year low German GDP. Supposedly the economic powerhouse in all of Europe. Yeah, real power. Power to you. So that's some of the market performance. Phase one trade deal. Allow me to read briefly here a tweet from Zero Hedge. I have cited Zero Hedge here many times, or, you know, a financial media outlet online. I follow them on Twitter. You can follow them on Twitter, online, their website, however you want to do it if you are so inclined to do so. I enjoy their commentary. I enjoy the articles they put out there. I enjoy some of their witty tweets that they put out there. Well, here's one in regards to the Phase 1 trade deal. Trade deal summary. China will buy pigs it desperately needs, soybeans it needs to feed the pigs, and whatever oil it can't buy from Iran due to U.S. sanctions. That sums it up pretty damn well. China also promises to buy more if it can, but won't. I mean, you can't make it any more succinct than that. I mean, that just hits it right on the head. Then you got some other things, some other details that came out in regards to this Phase 1 deal. China also grants U.S. funds permission to invest in trillions of local non-performing loans. We talked about this months ago, folks, if you recall. I said this was going to be a ploy, this is going to be a trap, that the Chinese are going to say, oh yeah, the United States, of course you can come in now and start investing in our markets, in our financial markets heavily, in our debt markets heavily. And don't forget, folks, China has $40 trillion in debt. U.S. dollars, not the Chinese yuan, U.S. dollars, $40 trillion. You think this is going to end well? This is like the spider saying, come on in, Mr. Fly. Everything's cozy. That's exactly what's going on here. That's the analogy I used months ago, saying this is what they're going to do because the Chinese know better than anybody the fraud that they have been perpetrating on the rest of the world for the past two decades. Okay? Now they're starting to reach terminal velocity. They cannot go any faster. It's going to start decelerating. That's it. That's it. This is why you're seeing and experiencing a global slowdown. China kept the globe out of a global depression 10 years ago during the great financial crisis because they were buying everything up. All the cement, all the steel, all the aluminum, all the copper, everything. They were buying everything. So they were able to keep the world economy going. Now, they've overproduced. Now they're saturated. There's only so many more bullet trains they can produce and build and set up. There's only so many more roads that they can pave. There's only so many more ghost towns that they can build. You get my point? And there's nowhere else to go to. You can't pass the baton to India. They're not ready for that type of explosive growth. And I imagine they'll be a little bit more prudent anyway. So there's nowhere to go. That's it. You understand? You're starting to see the picture here? You should already understand this if you have been somebody who has been following this podcast for quite a while. In exchange, continuing, China will make public FX, foreign exchange, information it already publishes. And if the U.S. feels China is violating the deal, it can be ended with one Trump tweet, which is basically the truth. Because there is an escape clause within this deal that basically says if any one of the parties thinks that the other party is acting in bad faith, that they can leave the deal. That's it. There is nothing here. There is no enforcement here. The United States is going to keep tariffs on Chinese goods, not all of them, obviously, but on a significant portion of them. So tariffs are still going to be on there. We talked about this yesterday, probably through the 2020 elections. Most of the goods, if they are in fact purchased, are scheduled to be purchased not in 2020, but in 2021. Donald Trump may or may not be the president in 2021. Okay? He will be up until inauguration. It'll either be his inauguration or the next president. Okay? So the bulk of this deal, the bulk of the goods, are to be purchased, if they're going to be purchased, in 2021, not in 2020. And the amounts take us back to where we were before this whole fiasco began. All right, so this is not going to be a major relief to retailers. It's not going to be a major relief to manufacturers. And it's not going to be a major relief to farmers. A lot of farms, especially family farms, and we discuss this here all the time, have gone bankrupt. The United States, via John Q. Public, the taxpayer, has been bailing out farms, mainly commercial farms, to the tune of tens of billions of dollars. So even if you were going to say that that is a negative cash outflow, and then you take in all of the, quote, positive cash flow that'll come in via these purchases, how long is it going to take until we break even? If the Chinese even make good on it. Again, this sums it up beautifully. China will buy pigs it desperately needs, soybeans it needs to feed the pigs, and whatever oil it can't buy from Iran due to U.S. sanctions. China also promises to buy more if it can, but won't. And you know why? Because China says, look, we're going to go with something if we need it. That's it. You can't force another country, you can't force a company, a country, an individual to do something if they don't want to do it. That's not how trade deals work. Basically, what China is saying, we're going to allow market forces, i.e. price, to determine where we buy our goods and services. The Chinese, the communists, are basically saying we're going to use market forces to make our decision, or to at least guide our decision-making process when it comes to making purchases from other countries. Meanwhile, we have a president of the United States who's making people believe that this trade deal is all about force. The Chinese have to do this. Which side sounds more like the free market capitalist and which one sounds more like the communists? This is ridiculous. I've been telling you guys this from the get-go, that trade deals are not miraculous, magical pieces of paper. You don't have a couple individuals sign it and then presto, that's it. The economies take off and everything's back to normal. You know, there was an idiot on CNBC I caught this afternoon. Some woman, I don't know who she is, never seen her before as far as I can recall. A guest, she's not one of the pundits, but she was a guest on there. And they were talking about retail stocks because Target got clobbered because of poor, poor holiday sales. I thought the U.S. consumer was booming. Boomtown. So why are all these retail stocks cratering? Oh, well, surprise, surprise. Not to you if you pay attention to this podcast. But this dingbat is out there, and she's basically saying, well, yeah, this could be good news with the trade deal because, well, the prices have gone up. Mm-hmm, yeah, that's right. The prices did go up, honey, because of the tariffs. And now, if the tariffs are removed, these retailers can keep their prices up there, so now they're going to be able to make better margins. Are you stupid? Nobody's buying them at these prices. That's why their holiday sales were cratering, in addition to a whole bunch of other things that we talk about here every day. These companies aren't going to keep those prices up there if they can't get consumers in the door. They're going to have to lower the prices. This is Econ 101. You pay attention to CNBC, you're going to lose IQ points, believe me. Okay? This is the caliber of the people they put on there. If the consumer was fine paying those prices and everything was honky-dory, then Target, their sales, their holiday sales would have been through the roof, not tanking, and along with it, their share price. You understand this? This is not difficult to comprehend. But this is the caliber of the people that they put on these shows. And she's like patting herself on the back. Yeah, this could be a good thing. Margins could expand because of this, because prices are sticky. They weren't paying the prices. That's why the sales are down. This is Econ 101 stuff. This is the law of demand. Okay? So that's that. We also have, and I did not actually watch the signing ceremony, but I believe it was a lengthy ceremony for what it's worth. And during this, I caught some news clips or some articles, some other people on Twitter that I follow, where during the ceremony and during the speech that followed by President Trump, he touted the performance of J.P. Morgan. And we didn't talk about this the other day, but they released their fourth quarter earnings and they were basically through the roof, just blowing through expectations. Surprise, surprise, isn't it? With the Federal Reserve pumping tens of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars overnight. Well, surprise, surprise that a bank does well. He's touting them. Oh man, they blew through expectations. Ladies and gentlemen, isn't Donald Trump supposed to be draining the swamp? Isn't that why you voted for him? Isn't that why he's there? J.P. Morgan is the swamp. They might be the conductor of the whole damn thing. And this is what he's touting, and this is what he is parading around. Remember, you bailed them out only a decade ago. Didn't you vote for Trump to say enough of this crap? I told you folks, the military-industrial complex, the swamp, is making more money now than they ever have before. The pedal is to the metal. They are the direct beneficiaries of all of this fraud, of all of this deficit spending, of the tax cuts, of the Federal Reserve printing all of this money like it's going out of style, because it is. You're finally starting to see this. How could he even come out and make this statement? And then through another article, I hear that Donald Trump talks about negative interest rates once again. This is criminal. What don't you understand? This is outright theft of your savings, of your hard-earned money. Forget how much you're taxed. Forget about inflation. Now he's coming directly for it. Once again. How much more do you want to continue to give to this monstrosity of a U.S. government that does things, I presume, at least speaking for myself, that does things in our name that I do not stand for a second? All of the Middle East tension, all of the other excursions that we're on all over the world, staging coups overtly, covertly, propping up dictators, all of this stuff. I don't stand for that. I don't stand for the welfare state. But guess what? That's where all the money's going. That's where it's going. And now negative interest rates. If you do not understand the consequences of this by now, especially if you've been with this podcast for a while, then stop listening to me and stop following me, because nothing's getting through. This is outright theft. You want to know how it's working? Why don't you go ask the Japanese how it's working for their financial system? Why don't you go ask the Europeans how negative interest rates are working for their financial system? They've still yet to recover from the great financial crisis. Then they had the Eurozone debt crisis in 2012. They're not recovering. Japan has been on the decline for the past 30 years. They have lost generations, plural, which is exactly what's going to be taking place in Europe, and it's what's going to be taking place in the United States of America, and it already has to some degree, because nobody wants to be a leader. Nobody wants to be honest with the people of Japan, with the people of Europe, with the people of the United States, and man up and fess up to the fraud and corruption that existed. That was supposed to be Donald Trump. He was supposed to be the guy that came in and shook things up, drained the swamp. Well, the swamp is making out like the bandits that they are. Okay? And he is touting them to the nation on live TV. And then he out again calls for negative interest rates. That, to me, it's almost impeachable in and of itself. I mean, that is outright theft. The taxation is outright theft. The inflation generated by the Federal Reserve, the currency devaluation, one and the same, is outright theft. I mean, this is the triple whammy. But that's what we're dealing with. Articles of impeachment were sent from the House of Representatives to the United States Senate. A little bit more of a serious tone by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell after the Senate received the articles of impeachment. And rightly so. I mean, this is a serious process. This is the responsibility now in the Senate to hold the trial. And it is the obligation of Senate leadership and all senators to be as impartial as they possibly can be and to allow for a fair and open trial. If Donald J. Trump is exonerated because the facts of the case prove as much, then so be it. He's an innocent man. He can go on and continue doing what he's doing. If it's the other side of it, If it shows that he is guilty, then he needs to be removed. The truth is the truth is the truth. Let the truth be known and let justice be served. Period. End of story. Doesn't matter if you're a Democrat. Doesn't matter if you're a Republican. Let the truth be known and let justice be served. All right. Now, I want to share a theory with you guys, complete theory, complete speculation on my part. But I've been asking myself, why are the Republicans so in lockstep with the president of the United States? I mean, this is almost an impossibility for an entire political party through the representatives, whether that be congressmen and women or senators, to be in lockstep. I mean, you can't get your friends to agree where to go to dinner, right? So, I mean, this is highly questionable activity as far as I'm concerned as to why there are virtually no Republicans coming out and saying, well, okay, President Trump, it's not impeachable, but he most definitely shouldn't have done it. We don't even get that. There is, he did nothing wrong, or people are, they're mum. They're just keeping their mouth shut, and that's it. So, my wheels are spinning. Why might this be? Could this be some real cynicism at play? Could this be some real Machiavellian ploy here by the Republicans? Maybe, maybe not. Again, complete speculation. But I think time will tell. And I think we'll find out here shortly. The Republicans basically have nothing to lose if they get in lockstep behind the president, right? 100%. If they get into a room and by their leadership, they say, here, look, here's what we're going to do. We are going to completely back and support Donald Trump through this process, through this inquiry. Okay. Basically, what I think this could be in a Machiavellian play is basically giving the president all the rope he needs to basically hang himself. Okay. Hear me out. We're going to allow the president, he can say what he wants. We're going to support him. We're not going to contradict him. We're not going to challenge anything. We're just going to support him. We're going to attack the Democrats, and that's it. Okay, why? Because we don't want Donald Trump. We don't want the wrath of Donald J. Trump coming after us individually or as a group, and we do not want the wrath of his supporters coming after us individually or as a group, because we all want to remain senators, congressmen, and congresswomen. Okay, that's easy to understand. That's self-preservation. That's as old as politics. All right, now, okay, they can play up this game that the Democrats are being unfair. It's taking place in the bunker in the House, in the Capitol building, yada, yada, yada. There's no process. There's no witnesses. There's no this, that, or the other, okay? Now it gets to the Senate. Now there's a trial. Now perhaps the Republicans can say, well, yeah, we do have 53 Republican senators, but that's not necessarily going to be enough to just rubber stamp this. Because these Republicans, they might be up in a heated battle come 2020. And if they're seen as rubber stamping this thing, that might not be too good. So at least a handful of us on the Republican side are going to have to, we're going to have to play it a little bit more safe. We're going to have to play it to the middle. And we're going to have to say, yep, you know what? We got to have some witnesses. We have to have some more documents come in. We're going to have to subpoena these things, all that stuff. And what's going to happen potentially, if there are witnesses, a lot of witnesses, and a lot more documents that are subpoenaed and entered into the record? Well, if it's a continuation of the witnesses and their testimony and the documents that have thus far been released, it is not going to be good for Donald J. Trump. So you hear a lot of reports that Republicans, at least on television, come out and support Donald Trump, or at least they don't criticize him. But behind the scenes, off the record, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. I don't stand for this, that, or the other. This is the Machiavellian play. You follow? We'll support him on TV because we don't want him coming after us. We don't want his base coming after us. But we'll give him enough rope to hang himself, and we'll see what comes out in the trial. And we're going to have to raise our hands. Look, there's only 53 of us. We can't agree on everything. There does need to be process. We are elected representatives here. The Constitution is above all of us. The idealism of the United States of America is above all of us. This cannot be rubber stamped. Cannot be rubber stamped. And so now you get these witnesses coming in, and it might not paint a pretty picture. And you get more documents to come in, and it might not be a pretty picture. Now, the Republicans can wipe their hands of it. So, oh, well, we didn't know this because these documents were never released. Some of these witnesses, these first-hand fact witnesses, they never testified before. We didn't know this was going to come out. So now they have cover to say that. Now, of course, the Democrats can attack them and say, look, how could they not have known this? But the Republicans are probably going to say, well, you know what? Look, we did our best. We stood by Donald Trump. You're not going to go vote for some socialist, are you? You're going to come back home to the Republican Party at the end of the day. That's their gamble. That's their gamble. And of course, that's all speculation. All speculation. And we'll find out what happens, what transpires here over the course of this trial, which could last a couple few weeks. And if there's more information that comes out, it could last quite a bit longer than that. And who the hell knows? He could be acquitted, and then more information comes out later, and he could be impeached again. This could be a circus for quite a long time. Now, we're already at the half-hour mark, so this is probably going to be a little bit of a longer podcast, but it's important. Lev Parnas, the associate of Rudy Giuliani, gave an interview, an exclusive interview, today with Rachel Maddow. Part one of this interview aired this evening. Some of it was edited. I would hope that Rachel Maddow and MSNBC would release the entire unedited interview on their website. I don't know if they're going to be doing that or not, but I hope that they do, because most definitely it was edited. You could see the hard cuts out of it, that type of thing. This, like anything else in this type of matter, raises more questions than it does provides answers. However, Lev Parnas was basically thrown under the bus by Donald Trump. Another thing that, you know, I don't know this guy. I have no idea who he is. I don't know what he was doing, this, that, or the other. So Lev Parnas is arrested by federal prosecutors in the Southern District of New York. And now it appears that he wants to be a canary. He wants to sing. We discussed yesterday that documents were released by Lev Parnas. They were released to the House Select Intelligence Committee, who was the ringleader in the impeachment process. That was Adam Schiff's committee. Those documents were turned over to the House Judiciary Committee under the leadership or the chairmanship of Jerry Nadler. Some of those reports I'm sure you have seen circulating yesterday and today in regards to some text messages, some handwritten messages and notes, and some formal letters, okay, by Lev Parnas to some of his friends and associates, to Rudy Giuliani, to Victoria Tensing, a Washington attorney, a letter by Rudy Giuliani, this, that, and the other. Well, one of the key questions that Rachel Maddow asked Lev Parnas today was, what is the one thing that you want the people to understand? What is the biggest lie or biggest piece of disinformation that is out there right now that you want to set straight? And he said that Donald Trump doesn't know or didn't know what was going on. He said that's a complete falsehood, that Donald Trump knew exactly what Lev Parnas was doing, what Rudy Giuliani was doing when it came to all of this Ukrainian mumbo jumbo. All right? That's not hard to believe. And this goes back to what we've been talking about on this podcast for almost a year, that the credibility of the president himself is in question. So now you're going to have somebody like this guy who has a checkered past, who looks like somewhat of a shady figure, now going up against Donald Trump. So now it's like, well, who do you believe? Who do you believe? Again, another podcast title that we had not too long ago. Yesterday, the other day, we had Truth, Lies, What Difference Does It Make? I mean, this is the world in which we live. Now, a lot of this could have potentially have been avoided had the president been somebody of outstanding and upstanding moral character, somebody who put a lot of weight on telling us the truth. But he is not that person. So now a lot of this, you have to take everything that Lev Parnas says with a grain of salt, and you have to take everything that the president of the United States says with a grain of salt. All right? So Lev Parnas is being charged by federal prosecutors. Is he coming out because he's looking for a deal? Is he looking for leniency? Is he looking for immunity? What's going on here? All right? So it's right of us to be skeptical of him, and it's right of us to question everything. And again, this interview and a lot of the things that they talked about are going to raise more questions than it does provides answers. Now, some of the interesting things that Lev Parnas also states has some corroborating evidence. All right? And now it's going to ask, again, the title of today's podcast is All the President's Men. So sort of front and center now is going to become Vice President Mike Pence. All right? Because according to Lev Parnas, his duty, his job, was to work as an associate of Rudy Giuliani's on behalf of President Donald J. Trump to get the Ukrainians under the new leadership of President Zelensky to announce, and I stress the word announce, an investigation into Burisma and into Joe and Hunter Biden. All right. I stated this months ago during the impeachment inquiry that we had this thought, what if Donald Trump doesn't even care if there's an outright investigation? Maybe he just wants the announcement because it's the appearance, it's the perception, because he can always hang this over Joe Biden, especially if Joe Biden becomes the Democratic Party's nominee for president. He can hold this over them. In fact, it would be better if it was just an announcement, because if there was a real legitimate investigation, well, then maybe it comes to a close before November 2020, Election Day, and, maybe it clears the air for him. Okay, so it's sort of, is that the case? Is it just the announcement? So Lev Parnas, he is tasked, according to him, by Rudy Giuliani, to get aggressive, to really make this happen. And according to Lev Parnas, what's actually more important for the Ukrainians, at least at this time, at that time, during the transition to President Zelensky becoming the president of Ukraine, was for the reality and the perception that the United States was standing side by side, arm in arm, with the new Ukrainian administration and with the Ukrainian people. That was more important than the actual military aid. And one of the ways that this show of solidarity was going to take place was a huge delegation from the United States being sent over to the inauguration of President Zelensky. Cabinet members, Vice President Mike Pence, all that jazz, okay? In a show of solidarity. During this time, Lev Parnas is pushing the new administration through a senior advisor to President Zelensky to announce an investigation. Announce the investigation into the Bidens, and the United States will send over this huge delegation for the inaugural. Okay? You follow? The Ukrainian said, "Nah, I don't believe you. You're Lev Parnas. Who are you?" Which is a legitimate question. Why are we dealing with you? Why are we not dealing with the president of the United States himself? Why are we not dealing with somebody within the National Security Council? Why are we not dealing with somebody from the State Department? So they said, "No, we're not going to do it. We're not going to do it." Now, maybe they thought that Lev Parnas was bluffing. He's not really this tough guy. He doesn't have this type of authority. He doesn't have these types of connections directly to the president of the United States. So Lev Parnas has to report this news back to his handler, who is Rudy Giuliani. He says, "Rudy, they're not going to do it." Rudy supposedly says, "We'll see. They're going to find out what happens next," or something to that effect. Okay, they're going to find out what happens next. What happens next? Mike Pence, who was scheduled to go over to the inauguration. You remember this? This wasn't that long ago. This was a mystery. It was canceled. His trip to the Ukraine was canceled. This was the next day. I believe they cited the dates, the 12th and the 13th. The 12th, they had this phone call. They had this discussion amongst themselves that, okay, we're not going to announce the investigation. Parnas calls Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani then presumably calls President Donald Trump or goes to the White House and tells him that they're not going to do it. And then presumably Donald Trump himself orders that Mike Pence no longer goes to Ukraine. Remember, there was a whole bunch of questions surrounding that time frame. Lev Parnas says 100% that's the reason why that trip by Mike Pence was canceled. Now, again, we can choose to believe Lev Parnas or not, but that is a time frame. He is providing details. Okay? So this is something that we have to take into consideration with all of this. Put him under oath. Go through all of the documents that were released. That's what we want here. We want the full truth. No matter who's implicated. Republican, Democrat, President, Vice President, Nancy Pelosi, Adam Schiff. I don't care. I don't care. And neither should you. So he's going on and on about this. And now you have to ask yourself the question, again, this raises more questions than it provides answer. What did Mike Pence know? Mike Pence was scheduled to go to Ukraine for this inauguration. It gets canceled at the last minute. Do you think that Mike Pence didn't know what was going on? Do you think he said, well, why not? Or do you think he just kept his mouth shut? It's best you not know, Mike. Do you think that conversation was had? Because that opens up a whole other rabbit hole to go down to as well. I would think the vice president would want to be informed as to why his trip got canceled at the last minute. Don't you? So now you have to ask Mike Pence, what did you know and when did you know it? See what I'm getting at here? Because Lev Parnas used basically the same terminology as Ambassador Sondland did. And he said, well, everybody was in the loop. All the president's men. He talked about John Bolton. He makes some presumptions. So those are the things that you have to take with a grain of salt. Some of them are logical. Some of them are stretched. Some of them, I don't think, took place. He did not have firsthand knowledge as to who directed whom to do what, when, where. But he is trying to do his best to connect the dots. That's not necessarily his job to do that. But check out the interview. Check out the interview on MSNBC. That's why I tell you guys to watch everything. Read everything. Listen to everybody. Because I don't know if Lev Parnas is going to go on an interview tour, an interview circuit. I don't know. But he was on MSNBC. And then he calls out Victoria Tensing, who is an attorney in Washington, D.C. She is married to Joe DiGenova, another attorney. You probably see these individuals on Fox News. I don't believe I've ever seen either of them on CNN or MSNBC. That's not to say that they haven't been there, but that's what I'm telling you. That's why you got to flip the station. That's why you got to go out and look what's being said on MSNBC, what's being said on CNN, what's being said on Fox News, because everybody's going to spin it to their liking. Well, she's being discussed because there's communication. So there is a physical record of text messages between Lev Parnas and Victoria Tensing. And Victoria Tensing is the attorney for a Russian oligarch, okay, a Russian oligarch who has been, who has files charged against him, I believe, by the Chicago U.S. attorney, the U.S. attorney out of Chicago. So a federal offense, and he is fighting extradition, and Victoria Tensing is defending him, trying to get the extradition and all the charges dropped and thrown out. Well, Lev Parnas throws a backstory behind all of this as well in saying, well, you know, if we can get this oligarch, because he has a lot of connections within Ukraine as well, if we can get the extradition charges dropped against you, can you do us a favor and convince the Ukrainians to announce an investigation into Joe Biden? If that's true, there is a big, big problem here. Big problem. Big. Okay? And you got the names of Victoria Tensing. You got the name of Joe DiGenova. You have John Solomon, the conservative reporter. He also is on Fox News quite a bit. We talked about this months ago. These are the same people, the same names that have been saying for months, if not years now, just wait until this one report comes out. Just wait until this one report comes out. It's going to be the death knell into the deep state. That's it. That's it. So far, who's been arrested? Nobody. Who's gone to jail? Nobody. Who's been charged? Nobody. The same group of people. Now what we're finding out, this is becoming the inner circle of the inner circle of the president of the United States. And Lev Parnas, while he wasn't putting words into the mouth of John Bolton, he basically said John Bolton should know quite a bit and he should come forward and testify. Because he would have a lot more firsthand knowledge as to what was going on, because he knows that Rudy Giuliani and John Bolton were butting heads. They had tension on a whole host of issues, that this, that, and the other. So what I said from the outset, folks, this was not just a phone call on July 25th. There was a backstory. And that's what we continue to find out. This raises more questions than it does provides answers. Some of this interview I deem as credible. Some of it I say is a stretch. Some of it I'm not so certain of. He did happen to apologize to Marie Yovanovitch, the former Ukrainian ambassador. He did apologize because he said, you know, there were things that I was told that she said about Donald Trump, this, that, and the other. And at the time, I believed it. Now, given what's come out in the record, her testimony, this, that, and the other, I no longer believe that she was out to get Donald Trump, that I owe her an apology. And he apologized. Now, maybe he's covering his rear end. Maybe he's trying to look good. I don't know. Again, those are the things you take with a grain of salt. But on the other side, you have people who have been telling us lies, conspiracy theories, exaggerations, this, that, and the other. These people are going down. They're still walking around. This report's going to come out. It's going to be the end of everything. That report comes out. Nope, everything continues going on. So, you know, who to believe? Who to believe? That's why these people need to be sworn in under oath and start testifying. You know, Rachel Maddow and her team obviously reached out to a whole bunch of people, Rudy Giuliani being one of them. By the time her show ended this evening, Rudy Giuliani made a comment in regards to the interview that has thus far been made public. And he didn't say that the entire interview was a farce, a fabrication. He just said that when Lev Parnas made basically the assertion that he was deputized by Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump to work on behalf of Donald Trump, he just said that's not true. Okay. Well, if you're going to say that's not true, Rudy Giuliani, why not say the entire interview was false? Get what I'm saying? If you're going to take the time to call up the producers of the Rachel Maddow show and say that one statement was false, not true, well, if the whole thing wasn't true, wouldn't you say the whole thing wasn't true? So now that's a head scratcher too. Are they slicing hairs? What's going on here? Again, raises more questions than it does provides answers. So now it's really incumbent, I think, on the U.S. Senate to have an open and transparent trial. It was always their obligation to do so. You got to put the politics aside. You have to allow the Constitution to do what it does best. You have to trust it. You have to put your faith and confidence in the U.S. Constitution. We have to. And again, I don't care if it's Donald Trump who goes down, Mike Pence, John Bolton, Nancy Pelosi, Devin Nunes, who his name was brought up as well today, Adam Schiff, Jerry Nadler, I don't care. Take them all down. Take them all down. I don't care. I want the truth. I want justice. End of it. So that's the other thing with Devin Nunes, the ranking member on the House Intelligence Committee. All right, remember at the end of the impeachment inquiry, there were some things. Oh, Devin Nunes was on the phone with Lev Parnas. What's that all about? Why was he involved with this guy, this shady character? Well, according to Lev Parnas, he had communication with Devin Nunes. Not that they're buddy-buddy, but he had even deeper conversations with a senior aide of Devin Nunes, because I guess they wanted to distance themselves, or there was that ethics probe into Devin Nunes, so he wanted to sort of distance himself, but talk to my senior aide. And according to Lev Parnas, his senior aide, I don't recall his name, but he does name him, he was already up to speed on a lot of things that was going on. Now, if that's true, that raises a whole bunch of questions that need answering as well. See what I'm saying here? This was not just a phone call on July 25th. There was a backstory. May the truth be known and may justice be served. All the president's men. This is going to continue for quite a while. Thank you so much for joining me today, ladies and gentlemen. Please like, share, subscribe, get the word out, and leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.